question or comment? Need savvy travel advice? Connect with Robert, Mary, and Rudy anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at RM World Travel. Now, back to RM World Travel.
Welcome back to the fastest 2 hours of travel, folks. And for the next 10 minutes, we're going to focus on the why as we connect with YMCA COO Paul McIntyre for today's installment of the Chief Travel Leader Series. And this portion of the program is sponsored by Preferred Hotels and Resorts.
And wherever your travels may be taking you for spring break this year, or maybe it's a romantic getaway, a personal trip, or some essential business, Preferred Hotels and Resorts is offering some excellent offers out there right now for you, including their last-minute escapes, bed and breakfast specials, or stay more and save more deals.
And something we've created with them for every listener of this show is you can now sign up for exclusive elite status in their popular I Prefer loyalty program. This is their top level, folks. It delivers so many perks such as room upgrades, priority early check-in and late checkout, private rates, plus points for free nights, meals, hotel activities, and more. Just go to our website, rmworldtravel.com. Click on the I Prefer banner right there at the top of the homepage. You can enroll in the elite status as a listener of the show and then go book some of those deals and enjoy your travels.
All right. Now, since we have a list of things we hope to cover with Paul McIntyre, let's get right to that show hotline to start our day as the COO of the YMCA is all queued up and ready for today's Chief Travel Leader interview.
Paul, good day to you. Nice to meet you electronically. Mary and I welcome you to America's number one travel radio show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
Nice to have you with us. You know, it's not often that we talk about an organization that dates back to 1844, and I would bet if we did a man on the street segment right now, asking people maybe at a shopping mall or city park, few would know that the YMCA here in America dates back to 1851, so 170 years ago, if I do my math real quick. I saw something before the show today that you have a presence or some connection to around 10,000 communities around the country, a major footprint, obviously. And since people are currently traveling, you know, less than in past years, spending time at a local Y is probably happening more and more. So I want to know, are all of your locations open? And if they are, have you had to scale back anything because of the pandemic?
Yes, we are in 10,000 communities. We have just over 2,600 facilities that would have a Y sign in front of it, but we're in tens of thousands of schools, churches, community centers. Interesting fact is that 85% of the U.S. population lives less than a 15-minute drive from one of our facilities. And we were significantly impacted by COVID. Probably have a few facilities based on state and local health guidelines, but most of our facilities are currently operating, though all of them at various times in 2020 were closed for different periods of time.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about, you just mentioned different state and local guidelines with all of this. As a national organization that does work in so many local communities, I'm sure you and the YMCA team have found it challenging over the past year. There's just been a lot of inconsistent rules and regulations required around the country with the virus. Parts of the country are now reopening, some at full capacity, others continuing on at reduced capacity. So I want to talk about summer camps. When I think of the YMCA, I definitely think of summer camps, and hopefully this year more will be operating over last summer, but again, we may have local ordinances causing some challenges with that. So, and I actually read that some West Coast families are looking to send their kids to summer camps here on the East Coast or in states like Florida or Texas. YMCA runs hundreds of overnight youth camps around the country, Paul. So are you optimistic for the season? What can you tell us about the summer camp season?
Yes, I'm extremely optimistic. We run right at 320 overnight camps collectively and over 10,000 day camps. And as of this week, 45 states have now approved the operation of overnight camps. There maybe could be some local jurisdictions that have reasons to override that. But that's very good news for us, and we have every reason to anticipate the other five will come to the same conclusion. We have done research with the American Camp Association and have some very strong data based on last summer to provide to help encourage them to understand our ability to operate safely. And the feedback from local Ys is we are, in most cases, for registrations running ahead of what is our baseline, which would be 2019, not 2020. So not only are we open, but kids are excited about camp, and I suspect some parents are excited about kids going to camp.
Well, I think
of course
you just made even more so.
For the kids, but absolutely the parents as well. So
yeah, I think that is some good news for sure. You know, I want to talk about another aspect of your operations and something, frankly, I'm not sure we've ever talked about on the show in all the years that it's been syndicated, and that's the lodging side of YMCA. I think back to when I was in college, I had a friend who traveled regularly regularly and stayed at YMCAs, and you offer an advantage over, let's say, hostels, for example, because there's generally a cafeteria or a food area of some type. You've got excellent sports facilities and pools and things of that nature. Rooms are private, and they don't have the curfews. I know not every YMCA offers lodging, but I do want to know, you know, how is this part of your business, you know, how has that endured during the pandemic, Paul? And I guess I would also say, I just don't know this, how many rooms do you have for rent around the country, and what's the average rate these days?
Yeah, we do very little of hotel-type lodging anymore. The majority of the housing that we do, and we still have nearly 100 facilities that provide housing, most of it has, over time, because of so many hotels being available, has adjusted into largely single occupancy residences, focusing on people that have less income to make it an affordable housing option. And those were a critical part of our work in the early days of COVID, because you're talking, to your point, they all still do have feeding together, and it truly is communal living, even though you have your own private room for sleeping and other things. And so massive adjustments to every part of those operations, from cleaning to how people interacted. So not much in the area of hotel-type housing, but a lot of just really valuable, meaningful work in local communities providing affordable housing.
And with those accommodations that are still remaining, would they be in larger cities, I would guess?
Yes, yeah. And primarily in the Northeast, because those, the Y, you mentioned 1851, the very first Y was in Boston in the U.S., and that's where the heavy early growth obviously was pre-1900, and those tended to be the ones that focused on that. A few still exist that were tied to rail travel, but most of those, again, have adjusted over time because there just wasn't the demand for that type of programs. And frankly, part of why we're still around 170 years later is that we have significantly adjusted the program and service mix we offer based on what people in our communities needed.
So, okay, that's a good segue to my question. We've talked to a lot of different executives in the hospitality industry over the past year about adapting, adjusting, pivoting. How has the pandemic, or has it maybe helped reinvent the Y or created some change within the industry?
Yeah, we're having very significant conversations about what it's going to look like for the next year and even 5 and 10 years. But in the short term, the two single biggest things weren't getting into whole new areas of work, but were significantly expanding rapidly last April and May, and then continuing to grow our work in two areas. One is in the area of childcare, not only preschool age, but also school age childcare. And then the second one was in feeding. We had probably starting 6-7 years ago gotten significantly into feeding, primarily during summers. And so we've got a lot of children at day camps, and many of them would be eligible for free or reduced lunches during the school year. Mm-hmm. And we became the provider of that with a lot of government funding and a lot of private philanthropy. And so literally by May 15th last year, we had over 1,200 essential worker childcare sites stood up, even though all of our childcare had basically closed 3 or 4 weeks before that while we in the society were figuring things out. We had also stood up over 1,200 feeding sites. Those numbers have grown since then, but we're finding that a real focus of our work is figuring out safe ways to care for kids and to make sure those get a meal get it.
Yeah, with all of those locations you have. Really quick, we've only have about a minute with you. I just want to go back to the summer camps for a moment with you, Paul. Anything that people listening should know about changes perhaps to operations or protocols to expect if they want to send their kids?
Yeah, there's definitely changes, and if you've taken a child to camp before, you'll notice them from the communication from the time you register, talking about things that are either suggestions or, in some cases, guidelines before you even arrive. Some are requiring, say, a test within a certain number of days or hours before arrival to check in. The idea of parking the car and the whole family walking the child down to their cabin and getting them set up doesn't happen in this environment. There's a single drop-off and staff do it. The experience at camp, while it still has all the outdoors, all the fun, it happens in different ways. But I think this summer it'll be ways that seem a bit familiar to people because they will have experienced in other aspects of their life. We want children to live normal lives, but we want to keep them safe.
Well, amen to that, Paul, very much. So listen, thank you. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us today. Do stay in touch and enjoy the weekend, okay?
All right. look Take forward care. To talking again.
Thanks, Absolutely. Man. Thank you, Paul.
Take care.
Well, that was some good news from Paul, Mary. Very much so.
Learned something there.
Yeah.
Nice to hear about all the feeding going on.
It is. I know you could break into a rendition of the Village People right now, but we won't do that. But that music right now means we need to take a quick sponsors break. And if you ever miss a part of the show or you want to hear something again, we archive every hour of every live broadcast on our website at rmworldtravel.com. Our destination spotlight is still ahead. Open road, emails, we've got museum galleries, so much more. A lot to do. Stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back.
Today's edition of RM World Travel is coming right back, and you can also stay connected with the program at rmworldtravel.com.